is now in session. Judge Bjorkman, Judge Bratfold, Judge Siegel, the Honorable Luis Dovre Bjorkman presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. It is January 28th, 2021. The first matter on our calendar for oral argument today is the matter of the determination of the need for an environmental impact statement for the Mankato Motorsports Park. Council, I know you are both familiar with our procedures. They are the same, even though we are appearing and participating by Zoom today. You will each have 15 minutes to present your arguments. Council, for the relators, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. It is important that you state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your arguments. And please be mindful when you are not speaking to mute yourself so we don't have any background noise. And with that, Mr. Tanak, you may proceed on behalf of relators.
Thank you. Am I muted?
We can hear you, Mr. Tanak. Go ahead. Now you are muted. Okay, you are still muted, Mr. Tanak.
Better? I'm losing some of my time here. Good morning. Thank you for helping me out there. My name is Marshall Tanak. I represent the relators in this case, the Citizens Against Motorsports Park and two individuals. The organization is made up of citizens and residents in and around Eagle Lake, where this particular project is intended to be placed. As the court's aware, this case concerns a matter that both statutorily and by case law in Minnesota, we view with paramount importance, and that is the protection of the environment. In this case, the issue relates to whether an environmental impact statement, or EIS, should be conducted with respect to a proposed 230-acre site, which would consist of primarily a 3-mile high-performance motorsports track laid in the middle of an agricultural area. The relators in this case obviously have grave concerns about the placement of this facility in their area, but the issue before the court this morning is not whether it's a good idea or not a good idea to have a motorsports park located in this bucolic farmland area. The issue is whether the particular project warrants additional review through an EIS. The standard, as the court's aware, both by statute and rule in Minnesota for an environmental impact statement, is whether there is potential for significant environmental effects. Remarkably, in this case, two at the local level, two units of Blue Earth County, and three different state agencies, the MPCA, the DNR, and the Department of Transportation all weighed in with different and varied but serious concerns about this project.
Mr. Tanak, let me ask you this. What is the record information that most strongly supports your argument that this project has the potential for significant environmental effects?
The most significant concern, and there are many, obviously, but the most significant concern, the paramount concern, would be that of noise. That's not the only issue, but it's a major issue that is of great concern to the relators. The noise issue, I think, to some extent is self-apparent. This is a quiet, bucolic farmland area, residential in certain respects, but largely rural. And the placement of a 230-acre area with this high-performance motorsports track is going to cause significant noise-related concern and affect the quietude of this area. Quietude is protected explicitly under the Environmental Rights Act and by case law, the Emperg versus White Bear Lake gun case. So we're protecting an important resource. The resource is peace and quiet. The noise level for this particular facility wasn't actually measured as to this facility because obviously the facility isn't operating, but the best information available from a comparable facility in Brainerd, the Brainerd Raceway track, reflects that the decibel level from the vehicles on the track could be in the range of about 110 decibels. That's equivalent to a rock concert.
But Mr. Tan, doesn't the modeling also suggest, or the surveys also suggest, that quietude, if you will, has already been impaired by the existence of the four-lane highway, and that additional noise, even if it's like a rock concert for a few moments, isn't going to perceptibly change the noise impact that already exists?
Well, that's an argument, Your Honor, that you're correct. The argument is made by the city that there's a lot of noise anyway from Highway 14, so what's a little bit more noise? We think that's a specious argument in several respects. First of all, Highway 14 is about a half a mile away from the particular racetrack being proposed here. Secondly, that highway does obviously generate noise, but it's largely during the rush hours in the morning and in the evening. It's not a perpetual loud noise that emanates all day. The proposed sports track here would be operated from sunrise to sunset, and there'd be potentially continuous noise during the course of the day, much closer to where the people live than the highway. Furthermore, as the DOT reflects, while there is some noise from the highway, highways make noise, of course, the noise from this motorsports track would significantly increase the noise, and the noise already exceeds state standards. The MPCA points out that the noise levels already are in excess of the acceptable state standard. Adding more noise makes a bad problem worse. So to the extent that the city is arguing, well, there's a lot of noise there anyway, which there isn't, but to the extent they're saying, well, it's noisy anyway, what's a little bit more noise? It's kind of the perverse of the, as we point out in our brief, it's kind of the perverse of the thin skull plaintiff argument, where you take the plaintiff as he or she is and then have to address the concerns of our existing affliction. In this case, it doesn't make much sense to say because there's already noise, we ought to add more noise and make the situation worse. And in fact, it won't be imperceptible. It's not a one-night stand like a rock concert, a couple of hours. It's going to be there all the time, and the potential is for it to get worse rather than better, not just from the race area, the sports track itself.
So, Mr. Tanik, I don't mean to interrupt you. Appreciate the importance of the noise issue to the relators and the amount of information in the briefs that's presented. Obviously, the city disagrees with your view of the noise issue, and they indicated a response in their decision to decline the EIS. And their response includes one of the notes that you've referred to a couple times, so did Judge Bjorkman, the MPCA, and I think it's SBP Associates, you know, who did examine noise levels, reviewed this issue, and said that the additional noise emanating from the project would be practically imperceptible. So in light of our standard of review, on what basis would we reason through a reversal on the noise issue?
Well, the review of the noise issue did not only consist of the noise emanating from the track itself. It didn't take into account the fact that there's going to be a lot of traffic coming to the track. Vehicles are going to come there. People are going to come and leave the facility, and that's going to create additional noise. So to the extent that the city maintains, well, Highway 14 is noisy, what they overlook or disregard and what the record fails to address, Your Honor, is the noise that's going to come to and from the track in addition to the noise from the track.
You know, and I'm interrupting you again, and I apologize, but only because it is a really big record. And we do have some analysis by the city about traffic. They comment that about the restricted hours, that this is a track that would not be operating four seasons. They also comment about the daylight constraints. And then in particular, they note that as the project was commented on and revisions were made, some of the traffic is necessarily going to be reduced because we don't have a golf entertainment center anymore. We don't have a hotel. So again, I'm just asking you to address our standard of review, which is that, you know, if we were to reverse, we find the city's decision to decline the EIS to be arbitrary and capricious. But they have stated reasons for their decision, especially, and again, I'm just talking about the noise issue at this point. They have stated reasons and backed some of it up with either changes to the project or with data. And so, you know, in light of that, tell me.
Well, part of the problem, Your Honor, isn't just what's stated, it's what's not stated. For instance, the record fails to take into account at all the effect that noise would have on the wildlife and waterfowl in the area. The focus of the noise is on the noise that would be emanating to the surrounding residents, and that's a legitimate concern, but this record does not indicate at all what impact that noise would have on wildlife and waterfowl, particularly the wildlife, and that's noted in the Blue Earth County Public Works response. The Blue Earth County Public Works personnel point out that one of the deficiencies of the EAW is that there's no attention given to the impact of the noise on wildlife or waterfowl, and that's a significant consideration. And we maintain, Your Honor, that this is an extensive EAW, no question about it. In the cases I've seen, oftentimes the EAW is just a mere rather skimpy checklist. Mm-hmm. This EAW is much more extensive than that, but it's quite porous. And the fact that it's voluminous doesn't necessarily reflect its quality, other than to say they did a lot of work on it. But the question for an EIS is whether there's any potential for significant environmental effects. And the record here reflects ample potential, not just with respect to noise, but on some of the other matters as well. And the statute requires, it mandates that an EIS shall be conducted. It's not discretionary at that point if there is any potential. And in this case, the record certainly does not eviscerate the possibility or potentiality of environmental concerns with respect to noise and other matters.
I saw two responses by the city to noise and wildlife. One is that they have now, as a result of public comment, changed the project to have close the gap on the sound wall for noise abatement purposes, which would also protect wildlife on the lake, that impact of closing the gap would diminish sound on the lake. Second, they comment that the wildlife is unlikely to be affected because wildlife has already been operating under the same problems we've talked about with noise from US Highway 14. So would you respond to those two arguments from the city?
Sure. Well, first of all, as I indicated and as in our briefs as well, the noise level here would greatly magnify the noise from Highway 14. And it just, we'd feel unacceptable to say, well, there's noise from our highway, so therefore any additional noise won't matter. It's going to matter a lot. It's going to matter like having a continuous rock concert there from sunrise to sunset. It's all day, at least in the spring and summer months from about March or April, through September or October, this facility is going to be operating all day, sunrise to sunset. So that's a significant period of time, more than half of the year, in which there'll be significant amounts of noise that are going to significantly magnify the existing noise. So it's not just a matter of being imperceptible. They're taking some noise that already exists, but magnifying it and aggravating it. Firstly, secondly, Your Honor, with respect to the steps that the city proposes to take, yeah, the public comments did have some impact on bringing about some degree of mitigation, but the question is whether that's enough mitigation. There's a procedural defect here, which is noted in our brief. The city made these significant changes in its proposal after the EAW was already submitted and after the public comment closed. Under the law, while a developer can make changes, adduce additional information. There was no opportunity for the public at all to weigh in on the proposed changes that were made at the last minute. In the 24 hours before...
Mr. Tanik, I tend to agree with you. I mean, as I read the regulation, there should have been earlier notice given to people who responded by making public comments. But it seems to me that the project changes and revisions sort of all favor the environment, if you will. I mean, they are designed, it seems to me, to mitigate or eliminate some of the proposed potential significant environmental effects. So how do the changes, even if your relators didn't have a chance to comment on them other than 24 hours, notice, how did they harm relators or the environment?
A couple ways, you're right. I mean, they were given only 24 hours to respond to this voluminous change to these voluminous proposals. But I think, first of all, the changes reflect that the environmental assessment worksheet was deficient in many respects in the first place. And while there were some changes made, that doesn't suggest that enough changes were made to obviate the need for a deeper look. And that's what an EIS does. Obviously, the purpose of an EIS is to examine whether that potential exists or not. An EIS would be much more detailed, much more exhaustive than an EAW. And that's why the EIS, the second level of environmental review, is necessary. As far as the changes themselves, Your Honor, some of them magnify the potential noise and other problems. For instance, one of the changes, while they've eliminated a hotel and a golf course that were initially proposed, one of the changes, and it is really a change to the project, would be to have basically a commercial strip mall there where they'd be repairing and working on vehicles in the facility in kind of a sort of like a strip mall where cars could be repaired there. That was not part of the original proposal. That raises some other issues relating to not so much to noise issues, but it relates to storm drainage, runoff, waste. That's going to degrade the environment as well. So some of the changes are not necessarily beneficial. And even to the extent they are, that doesn't mean they've made enough changes to say, well, we've made some changes, therefore we don't need an EIS. There should have been more changes, and that's where an EIS would be helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Tanik. I think you've used now the seconds that you lost, I think you regained, and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, Mr. Reavers.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, my name is Paul Reavers, and I represent the respondent, the city of Eagle Lake. The city took the requisite hard look at the project, the environmental concerns, and on this record, made a reasonable, rational decision that an EIS wasn't necessary. The city put in substantial time and effort here, and keep in mind what the city did was, and I think it's ironic that an EAW is described as a brief document, but the city retained a third-party reviewer, Houston Engineering, to assist in this project. And this is a robust and full record. And I think noise is the issue. I mean, I think that's what I want to focus some of my comments on. And I believe one of the questions to my colleague was, what's the best evidence to support the notion that noise is going to create a problem? And I'd like to point the court to a few items in the record that I suggest more than support the city's determination. And I want to first note, this is not BIR. We're not Brainerd International Raceway. We're not plopping a 3 mile racetrack in the middle of the Boundary Waters here. And I want to point the court to the sound study, and I think Judge Bradfold had commented on it, but it's at the administrative record 202. That's the SBP Associates report, and it's specifically page 471. And this is kind of looking at the impact of the track. And with the berm and mitigation that's put in there, it's less than a decibel difference. And there's nothing in the record to suggest there's going to be the noise level created by this track is going to raise the level of a rock concert. Now, page 207 of the record has those chart, and this is in the report from SBP. The 110 decibels is the rock concert. What we've shown here, at least what the record evidence shows, is the impact of the track will be between 60 and 65 decibels, which is normal speech, between normal speech at 1 minute and a vacuum cleaner at 3 minutes. And all of the evidence in the record demonstrates this project will comply with state noise standards. So I think those are the critical evidence from a noise standpoint that the city did the work, the developer did the work to demonstrate. And it's 472 where, and I believe Judge Bradfold commented on that, where it says the noise level increases are expected to be, and I quote, imperceptible. And there's the suggestion that, wait a minute, so number one, we can show that there is no perceptible impact, so it can't have an impact on people. But the second argument the relators make is related to wildlife, and I want to point the court that there's a suggestion that we didn't look at that, and that's just not accurate. And I want to point the court to page 312 of the record, where there's a specific discussion by specific responses to that. And what the city says in the response to that comment is, it is unlikely that there is a noise sensitive wildlife near and on Eagle Lake that will be significantly impacted by the proposed project. Again, goes on to discuss, we've already got a 4-lane highway here, and this is being built right next to it. And that's why I think the pictures sometimes are worth more than words here, but when you look, that's why we put the pictures in the brief. The highway is almost right on top of Eagle Lake.
So Mr. Reavers, if I'd like to talk to you a bit about that part of the city's response. So you're right, the city does indicate that it is unlikely that noise sensitive wildlife will be impacted by the proposed facility. But the city also says that studies have shown that roadway noise can have negative impacts on certain wildlife species. So this is a special lake. It's a national environment lake. It's a wildlife lake. DNR has urged the city to recognize that and take it into consideration in this development. And in particular, the DNR directed or commented on this EAW and said, looks to us as though the city has not considered noise as to wildlife in particular. And, you know, I see your comment. I appreciate that the comment is a response. What I'm struggling with is that comment actually considering the impact of noise, or is it disregarding it? And so if you'd help me out with that, I would. Because, you know, as you heard Mr. Tanik's argument, he did it eloquently. I don't need to repeat it. But it sounds like you're saying we just don't have to think about noise and the impact on wildlife. We're just going to make that decision. And I guess I'm struggling. If you recognize that studies have shown that noise has an impact on wildlife, then where's the next step from the city?
Well, I think it's a different situation. If we're in the boundary waters and we're putting a track next to a lake in the boundary waters, is a different situation than here, where we have a 4-lane highway existing. And I think the parts in the record too, I'd like the concept drawings on pages 51 and 43 of the record, I think are really instructive to show the layout of this. It's right next to, the track is right next to the road. And that's why I think when you look at that, the city did take into consideration that, wait a minute, that's a reasonable, rational conclusion by the third party reviewer on behalf of the city to say, in light of the amount of traffic or sound that's already being created by the road, and the track is going
to
be
so
west.
I guess what I'm trying to understand, Mr. Reavers, are you suggesting that the DNR didn't know that when they made their comment? And I'm not trying to take a cheap shot. I'm just, you know, your answer isn't, it's just not, I just need a little bit more from you so that I understand exactly what you're saying. Because, you know, the human issue was analyzed. It was analyzed by the third party. It was analyzed by the MPCA, and they came back and said it's imperceptible for humans, right? And you gave us that data. So what do we do about the wildlife? If you could just take another run at that and rely on the record, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. And I Your Honor, I look at, again, just looking at the minimal increase in the sound created here, it's less than the road. And so this project creates less sound. That's a matter of than the road. So the road is 72 and a half to 65 decibels. This project is with the berms is 59.4 to 57.3. And this is on page 471 of the administrative record. So that's where I would point the court that yes, there is still an imperceptible amount of sound, and there's nothing to suggest that that is going to negatively impact wildlife here. It's a reasonable conclusion that the road is already there making substantial noise, that there aren't noise-sensitive wildlife there. That's a logical conclusion on behalf of the city. And I suggest we don't need to go further than that in light of the record evidence of the noise that's created and what's already there. And again, this would be a different situation if we were next to the boundary waters versus Highway 14 almost on top of the lake. And so that's the way the city approached it. I think that's a rational, reasonable decision, and it's supported by the record. So it's not something we forgot about. We took a hard look at that and we did respond to it. And that's the standard. Did we take the hard look? We did take it. They disagree with that. But on this record,
if I could direct you, I appreciate the discussion about the noise issues, which I think everyone agrees were some of the primary concerns, but the concerns went more broadly. And when the city decided it needed to get more information before making its EIS determination, it also said it needed more information about how the land was going to be used or maybe altered, still stormwater management and broader impacts on this wildlife lake in terms of water quality and habitat. How does the additional information address those concerns?
Well, I two things. I mean, number one, keep in mind there's a suggestion this is a massive 230-acre development. I think the record shows, you know, this is ag land right now. It's going to be, I think, 153 acres or over 150 acres are going to be returned to native grasses there. The wetlands that will, there's farmed wetlands here. And this is, you can see this in page 43 of the administrative record shows the farmed wetlands. I mean, they're basically farming over the wetlands currently. Those are going to be replaced at a 2-to-1 ratio. And as the city points out, that's typically how development works. That's a net gain that the wetlands that are now being farmed are going to be replaced. So, and having 153
acres. To be clear though, Mr. Reavers, the replacement is, it's done in accordance to law, but it is not within this watershed, right?
It's they purchase wetland credits, correct? But that is, and when you look at these wetland, I mean, they're in the field right now. That's why I think 43 is a good illustration to look at. Is this is not how folks maybe think of wetlands. When you think of a wetland, you think of, you know, prairie grass and thing. This area is being farmed over right now. It's a low-lying area, and so that's not creating a significant environmental impact. And with respect to storm water, there's significant permitting that this project still needs to go through. And it's reasonable to, and those are, and these are, we put, these are in the brief, but the NPDES permit, the MPCA has to permit this. They need a stormwater pollution prevention plan. Department of Labor and Industry needs to look at the building service and storm drainage system review. There's substantial review that needs to be completed and permitting for that. And that's reasonable for the city to rely on that permitting process to address the stormwater concerns. And again, we have in the stormwater, and it's 51, another illustration I thought was helpful for the court. And this is the showing the stormwater management on site and how that.
Mr. Reavers, if I could just ask a quick question. So one thing that changed over time is that the developer said that they were not currently planning on adding in the hotel and golf course, and so it's a smaller project. So part of this mitigation with native grasses, et cetera, I mean, is this, you know, kind of death by 1,000 cuts, I guess, it would be the question. Like, this is okay because it's only X decibels and there's native grasses and there's this and that. If this course is a success, and I'm assuming the city of Eagle Lake wants it to be a success, so it's on its property tax rolls and you don't have an abandoned 3-mile driving course stuck there, then presumably they're going to come back and ask for now we want to build a hotel, now we want a golf course. And each of those individually may not have a significant impact, which is kind of the argument here. But is how do you deal with that? Because there's no firm commitment that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen right now?
Well, we don't have a crystal ball, obviously, to know precisely what's going to happen in the future. We have to look at what the project that is before us and evaluate that. If there's different projects in the future, it's possible those different projects could trigger additional environmental review, depending on the scope of the project. So based on the record we have here, you've got 150 some acres going into native grassland, and it's, you know, the consultant points out farming practices have degraded wetlands. I mean, the phosphorus loading, that's frankly common knowledge. So putting agricultural land back to native grasses is a win, is an environmental win here. And that's the majority of this is going into native grasses. And to the extent that there's changes or somebody proposes a different project, that's why the rules are set up, that additional environmental review could be triggered, again, based on the scope of the project. And the city put in substantial amount of time, the developer put in substantial amount of time. On this record, there is a reasonable, rational basis to support the city's determination that this project does not have the potential for significant environmental effects. And we would ask the court to affirm that determination. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reavers. Mr. Tanik, you have the last word. And we can't hear you.
Better?
Yes, we can hear you now. Thank you.
Thank you. I guess I have 5 minutes to the last word, Your Honor. Thank you. I want to address some of the what was referred to as the non-human issues. I think we've spent a lot of time talking about the noise issues, and I think the court has a pretty good grasp on those concerns. But there's a number of non-human issues that I think need to be focused upon, particularly the impact here on wildlife and waterfowl, apart from the effects that this will have on the individuals and people living in the area. One critical, one matter that wasn't examined at all in the EAW that merits further scrutiny is the archaeological features of this site. The Blue Earth County Public Works noted in its position that the EAW totally ignores the question of whether the archaeological features of this property. And that's the kind of issue that can come up when digging deeper, no pun intended, with an EIS. Secondly, the Blue Earth County Public Works report refers to the impact of solid waste and fuels and what effect they would have runoff from the solid waste and fuels from the track on the wildlife and waterfowl in the area. As Judge Bradfield noted, Eagle Lake is indeed a special lake. It's one of 60 lakes that's designated as a wildlife lake in Minnesota. And that designation is attributable to the fact that it's a very shallow lake. As a shallow lake, it's hospitable to aquatic vegetation that welcomes the wildlife and waterfowl in that area. They range from deer to ducks and quite a bit in between. The motorsports track here, the record reflects, is going to result in additional sediment running off into the lake. That sediment is going to come from the track itself, from the vehicles, and also from the construction equipment that's used to developing that the 230-acre site. And
let me just ask you this. Mr. Reavers suggests that those concerns are real, but that they will be addressed during the extensive permitting process that would follow approval of this project. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's contrary to law in Minnesota. Basically, the argument is being made that, well, there'll be mitigation down the line. Don't worry about it. We'll fix that. And the case law that we've cited addresses the fact that there has to be some very specific, targeted, certain types of features or to constitute mitigation. It's not enough to have good intentions and say, don't worry about it, we'll fix it. If that were the case, there'd never be the need for an EIS because the developer or the municipality could say, whatever concerns might exist, don't worry, we'll fix it. And I think Judge Siegel's comment is a good one about the cumulative effect of all of these different features that we've talked about and what the future holds. Obviously, none of us know for sure what's going to happen in the future, but it's reasonable to anticipate that there's going to be additional development in this area. The track has already talked about holding sanctioned events rather than just using it for people to run their cars on, high performance cars, there probably is going to be the development of a sanctioned racing there. That is going to significantly aggravate all of these other problems. As I pointed out, the new proposal would involve having setting up essentially a commercial strip mall to have auto repair and other work done on cars at the facility, which is going to create additional environmental problems and concerns. The sediment that's going to be run off into the lake is going to significantly, what the effect of the sediment that'll run off into the lake due to this track and the construction of the track is going to elevate the lake. It will no longer be really a shallow lake hospitable to wildlife and waterfowl, but it's going to be significantly degraded. And because of that sediment, there's going to be a negative impact on the lake and the waterfowl and wildlife that depend upon it. Furthermore, the DNR noted the increase in invasive species that will occur because of the construction of the track, the invasive species that are attributable to the track and the construction equipment that's going to be used on the track. So there's further examples of what we refer to as the cumulative effect. It's not just one feature. It's not just the noise. It's these other features that have a significant degrading impact on the wildlife, waterfowl, in addition to the concerns on affecting the quality of life, the changing what's really a rural bucolic area into an area where a high-performance racetrack is placed there. It's the wrong place for it. We maintain that an EIS should be conducted to examine these issues because there is indeed potential for significant environmental effect, and the best way to address that is through an environmental impact statement. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tanik, and thank you, Mr. Reavers. The case was well argued and presented overall, and we appreciate those efforts. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. We will now recess in preparation for the 10:20 oral argument. Thank you.